and welcome to The Full Perspective. I'm Charlie Thomas, Content Director for the Insurance Insider, and each week I'm going to be talking to some of Insider Publishing's senior staff to dig into the week's most significant stories. Today I'm joined by Adam McNestry, Editor-in-Chief of the Insurance Insider, and Fiona Robertson, Trading Risks Managing Editor. Thanks for joining us, guys.
It's okay, Charlie.
So we're going to start this week's episode with the London Matters report. This is the third iteration of the LMG commissioned report released on Wednesday, and it provided a comprehensive overview of the London market and declared EC3 to be in good shape. Adam, talk us through your thoughts on the report.
I think what was really noteworthy here, Charlie, was there was a marked turnaround in the sentiment of the report. If you look back to 2014, when we had the first London Matters report fronted by Steve Hearn, that was really a wake-up call to the market. It was an attempt to break through market complacency and stress that London's position as the preeminent global centre was under threat if it didn't change. I think 2017 in many ways was a continuum with that. And what they've put out this time is much more upbeat in tone. And I think that probably reflects the market sentiment right now. Partly that's about changing market conditions. Partly I think it's because there is widespread feeling now that there is more strategic leadership in place at Lloyd's and a lot of good ideas in the future at Lloyd's change program. And I think there's some statistics in there that are also really positive. You know, after a long time of shrinking, London's market share between 2015 and 2018 stayed steady, and its share of the US E&S market grew substantially. So there's some positives in there for sure.
That's good to hear. I mean, that all sounds really rosy, but I guess there are areas to work on too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's positives there, but the structural challenges for London remain, and they are substantial. So you have excessive expense, you have a lot of duplication of effort because of the way the subscription market is organized, you've got technological inefficiencies, you have a hugely overextended value chain with therefore high acquisition costs and distance from the client. There are issues around human capital as well. There's worrying statistics around an aging workforce. There are still issues around the gender gap. And I think as well, particularly important is product innovation. And London has made some moves, things like the Lloyd's Lab, around product innovation. But I think that there's still a great deal it has to do to reestablish its reputation as the kind of the home of insurance innovation and the place that complex and emerging risks go to be insured. So, and it's also worth noting, of course, that all of these difficult structural challenges that London was grappling with now have to be dealt with alongside the shock and the uncertainty that results from COVID-19. So the task became even harder.
I think as much as COVID has been a great shock, Lloyd's is well practiced at handling these kind of massive claims events. And I think in one respect, we could say maybe it might have progressed the reform agenda, particularly on the technology side, given that everybody's had to adopt remote working. And presumably that will give a boost to some of the electronic placement processes that Lloyd's is wanting to improve uptake of.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. The PPL figures have been encouraging, and I think everyone's been surprised by how successfully the London market, by reputation antiquated, has managed to adapt to remote working. I do think, though, that it has to be said that challenges remain. So getting the complex risk platform right so that we've got a data-first market, straight through processing, ease of access for brokers is really important. And to get that right and to get a lot of the other elements of the Future at Lloyd's program right, they're going to have to be difficult technology builds, and London's track record there is poor.
That's true. That's true. OK, well, let's move on to our second story this week, which is what on earth is going on with Watford Re? So this week saw an activist investor call on Watford to consider a strategic review, which could lead to a sale or putting itself into runoff. The investor argued that Watford had consistently underperformed its peers on key metrics, and that the fact that its stock was trading at 60% discount reflected fundamental problems with the business model. Fiona, what's your take here?
Well, I think the total return reinsurer model is quite a fascinating one. And one of my colleagues, Gavin Davis, on Inside PNC has come up with quite a nifty term to describe them. And that's irony factories. And what he's referring to, I guess, is that the track record of some of these vehicles has been really good for the sponsors of them or the service providers, but not so much for the ultimate investors in the vehicles. So with Watford, we're talking about, I think it was version 2.0 of the total return or hedge fund reinsurer platform, where companies that were getting started decided that trying to set up fresh infrastructure to target business was just not going to be achievable in the current market, which was obviously pre-COVID much tougher. So with these concerns about access to business, Watford was one of the ones that got set up with a reinsurer essentially sponsoring during the launch and then taking fees from them to service and source their business. And on the investment side, the outsourcing is done to HPS. What that leaves them open, vulnerable to, I think, in spite of the sort of 2.0 label, is that the question of where is the independent franchise value? And that is one that the activist investor in this case, Ron Bodman, pointed to, saying, you know, where is the point of difference that this company has? It's reliant on Arch for the sourcing. And he's pointed quite, again, back to the fee issue. He's pointed to the fact that Arch and HPS have collectively taken just under $200 million in total income from fees since the launch of the vehicle, whereas the net income that's been returned to Watford investors has been not quite half that at $109 million. So back to the sort of irony factory label, you have this question mark over what the long-term advantage of these vehicles is. Just how long term it's going to be now is sort of in question with this activist launch. So
I guess the question looking forward is what options the Watford board has. You know, perhaps Adam, you've got a take on that.
Yeah, I don't think that they're well placed to stand up to this attack. I think it's forensically and intelligently constructed, and it's pretty difficult even to build a case with selective presentation of the numbers that Watford doesn't have a problem here. The business is valued at about 0.45 of book value. It's even below Greenlight Re, and Greenlight Re held takeover talks with runoff providers and is in an extremely challenged position. It's hard to argue that it wouldn't be possible to unlock substantial value in excess of the current multiple just by opening up the business to a sale or by placing it into self-administered runoff. I think it's also worth noting that not all of the levers that would typically be available to a company trying to resist an activist are available to Watford here. Dismissing Ron Bodman as a kind of ill-informed outsider or a stick-up merchant who doesn't understand the nuances of the sector won't work. Bodman's a very experienced industry investor. He knows the sector inside out and he's respected. I think you also just have to look at some of the things that they might do, as well as the kind of typical pugnacious, that you might see as also typical pugnacious dismissal of an activist investor. And those things aren't available to them. They've already changed their CEO. John Rathgeber stepped down at the end of March in favor of John Levy. So a change of management probably isn't on the cards. The firm is very lightly expensed at the center. It's not like they can come out with a big cost-cutting program to drive earnings. They have already looked at M&A as a way to try and pivot to being a specialty insurer or reinsurer and source more of their business directly. And that would be a way of building the franchise. But the target, AXA, a French P&C company, looks unusual. The other players, the other total return reinsurers, have looked to more obvious targets like the Lloyd's market for their acquisitions as they look to diversify. So I think that they definitely have some issues around that. If I think about what they could look to do, I think the obvious thing is to try and renegotiate the fee levels that Arch and HPS are taking out of the business. And they can certainly argue there's been weak performance on both fronts. What isn't clear is how much leverage they're going to have to do that. I think the company needs to break its public silence. It hasn't said anything yet. It's ignored requests for comment, and it needs to set out its position and explain what it's doing. Ultimately, the boards are fiduciaries for shareholders, and I think it's difficult to escape the conclusion that there are really sound reasons why Watford should appoint a bank at this stage and review its options. If it does decide that the best option is to remain independent, it will at least be in a stronger position for having conducted that exercise.
Unfortunately, that is all we've got time for this week. Thank you to Adam and Fiona for joining me. And thank you guys at home for watching. Until next time, stay home, keep safe. And we hope you'll join us next week for the next episode of The Full Perspective.